Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. It's Jesse Green at the control panels, and today we are having a conversation about scaling your business by leading high-performance teams. It's an important topic for all of us who want to create a practice as well as a life. Now, my guest today is Mark Hodgson, and you can find him at markhodgson.com.au. But before we do get into the conversation with Mark, just a couple of public service announcements for you. If you're new to our podcast, welcome. It's wonderful to have you here. And if you're familiar with our podcast, welcome back. It's good to have you here as well. If you have not yet found us at the Savvy Dentist Facebook group, please do head across to drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And you can find a heap of free stuff there, tools, checklists, training, and so on. And we'd love to invite you into that group if you're a dentist. Equally, if you're looking for more content to help you on your journey, please download the Savvy Dentist app from your iOS store if you're an Apple user, or the Google Play store if you're an Android user. So there's a couple of free resources there that would encourage you to grab hold of and utilize to the max so you can create, as I said, a practice and a life, which is awesome. So our guest today, Mark Hodgson, is an absolute trooper. He has had an incredible background in corporate life, in military life. He is author of a book called Time to Shine, and he's going to be talking to us today about his lessons in leadership and the things he's taken from his incredible journey into small business from a corporate background. Mark, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for taking the time to hang with us today.
My absolute pleasure, Jesse. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too, mate. We've been having a bit of a conversation off air, and there's some incredible similarities in your story and my story. Both of us have worn the white uniform of the Navy at some point in our career, and I'm curious to just start our conversation by asking you a little bit about your journey, because like most of it, it's not linear. Like most of us, there's been some detours. Like most of us, there's been some things that have worked tremendously well, and I'm assuming a couple of missteps along the way, as in my own life as well. So how did you find yourself in the work, in the space where you're doing the work you do now?
Thanks, Jesse. I was going to say, no, I had a completely flawless journey to today, a 54-year-old man living and working in Sydney. Now, from my accent, this is, we'll probably understand, I'm originally from the UK. I'm English. My background is actually in advertising and media. So I started as a selling TV in the UK and did very well at that, doing media sales. And at the age of 30, I got to, which seems bizarre now, I got tired of London and tired of life, as they say. So I think I'd been on holiday with my then girlfriend, now wife, and we went to Australia at the age of about 30, which was at the height of the whole, what's the film with Crocodile Dundee, Australia, I think, where the Olympics were hoving into view. Yeah. It was a very shiny, exciting, and in those days, to a POM, an exotic location. So we came on holiday and we came back from there and said, oh, we should go and live there. So that was the plan at the age of 30. We had a bit of a detour though. So we went to live in Hungary. So I spent 5 years living in Budapest because my wife her mum's Hungarian. So we did a bit of a detour there, and I took my media career also to work in Budapest for 5 years. And those, if you've never been there, people, go there. It's the most amazing city and a great place to visit and enjoy. And we've actually got a little holiday home there, which is extraordinarily inconvenient. We've got a holiday home, 11,000 miles from where we live. So that gives you a little bit of a sense of chaotic planning or non-planning. Yeah. So we got to, so where we're now, that takes us about to 1999. We actually, during that process, we'd applied to emigrate to Australia. We had the visas granted to us. And when you get the visa granted, you have a five-year window to take it up. Hmm. So after 5 years, we had to go or lose the option. So in late 99, we came to Australia, continue with my media sales career. And at that point, I transitioned into working in the outdoor advertising space. So those large billboards and bus shelters and all that kind of thing, planning, selling, putting those together, telling the stories around that. I really enjoyed that up until I guess about 10, 12 years ago, where I got very frustrated. I was trying to, my interest in leadership was growing all the time. I guess my experience, I was fairly globally experienced at that point. I worked in the UK, worked in Central Europe and different countries in Central Europe, working in Australasia as well, and kind of think wanting and really wanting to grow and be and I guess develop further. And that was at the time when there were probably 10 businesses in my sector and they were all collapsing together, all being bought by each other. So I wanted to become a CEO, but there were about 10 CEO roles and then they became 7 CEO roles. And now actually fast forwarding, there are now 2 CEO roles in outdoor organizations in Australia. So I was forever trying to get up that pole. And unsurprisingly, the incumbent CEOs were rusted on like barnacles. They weren't going anywhere.
Sounds like a greasy pole you're trying to climb.
Yes, it was. It was. So I found that very frustrating. And I think also part of that as well is my own view and opinions of what leadership is and what it should look like. I guess I looked around and found myself frequently disappointed by the lack of vision, the lack of energy around that. And so a few things came together and I decided to leave the media industry. And the other thing about the media industry is that to get to the very top of the media industry, arguably not the most pleasant types get there. And I think so also my own personal values were very much more, I guess once you pass being a sort of 30-something-year-old thrusting young money-orientated sort of sales leader and mature beyond that, you actually, your authenticity, your values have become more important. So I was kind of, it was starting to not quite, like a broken bell, it was kind of a bit off. It wasn't quite chiming for me. So I took a role in a very different direction and I ended up joining a large not-for-profit in Australia. And across 3 years, I led a business transformation and we turned $1 million loss into a $4 million profit in 3 years. This was a for-profit division of a not-for-profit business. So it really, when I first joined that business, there were people on street corners holding out cans and people putting in gold coins thinking they were helping the homeless or domestic violence or whatever. And what they're actually doing was propping up a bottom line of a business that should have been making money. And I found that pretty awful. So I was very proud that in 3 years we managed to turn that around and turned a, I say, $1 million loss into a $3 million profit. And what was exciting about that for me was we did that in the right way. So that wasn't a slash and burn exercise. It was really about getting more out of the people who are already in there. There were about 200 people across the country working in different guises, but they would just been really poorly led. And what we were able to do was really help them to grow.
So I'm curious to understand that because I think that's a really lovely entry point into our conversation actually because, you know, leadership, as you said, you'd become disillusioned as you're working in the media industry and you'd been able to take some of those lessons or ideals into the, this is a real mouthful, the for-profit section of a not-for-profit charity.
Yes.
Try saying that with a couple of pints. Anyway, you'd been able to take those things and you mentioned to me that it was just a case of they'd been not quite led in the direction or not quite led in the way that they could be to maximize what was already happening there. And this is a common thing that we see in business all the time. There's these tremendous resources, whether they be human resources or other assets in the business that are untapped. So I wanted to ask you from a leadership potential or leadership perspective, how do you firstly identify that untapped potential? And then secondarily, what did you do to be able to go, wow, we've got this untapped asset here. How do we maximize that?
Okay. So let me start by telling you, so my favorite quote about leadership, I think, which hopefully gets to the heart is the role of a leader is to bring out the greatness in others.
Yeah.
Bring out the great. So, and leadership is a privilege. And I know there'd be plenty of people listening to this. I'm sure they go, leadership is a privilege. What's this guy talking about? Just, people are just a pain in the bum. They call in sick. They're inconsistent. They're great one day. They're appalling the next day. And if I could only just automate everything so it was just me, that would be my perfect world. And I'm thinking that's probably resonating with a few listeners. But if we actually flip that a bit, you know, leading is a privilege. And I think if you, and what I see a lot, and I work with a lot of leaders, I mentor about 35 leaders each year in a variety of ways. But fundamentally, I think the problem with most leaders is they don't lead, they manage. And there's a difference. There is a difference. And one of the, there was a quote by John Cotter who wrote a great book on leading change. And he said recently that that most businesses are over-managed and under-led. Now that might sound very meta and it applies to big companies like Telstra and ANZ, but, and I think that's true, but it also applies to a small practice with one or two principal dentists and maybe 5 or 10 staff. We mustn't mistake management with leadership. Don't get me wrong, management is important and there is a big element of management within leadership, But I think leadership is a very different piece, and it starts with us. And in terms of what I did with the team at Mission Australia, it kind of, and this might sound a bit weak, I don't know, but it's very much putting yourself at the bottom. It's a bit kind of servant-hearted. It's a bit like, okay, if my role is to bring out the greatness in others, so what I need to do, therefore, is work out what do I need to do, what I want them to do, what do they need to do, what are the blockages to them achieving that? What are the blockages? And then my job is to remove the blockages for them. Now, don't mishear me. That's not to say do the work for them, but remove the barriers. So the barriers might be they're not sufficiently well trained. It might be they're not clearly motivated. It might be they're not clear on what their goals are. Those are all barriers. So my role is to do as much as possible to equip them to be successful, and then fundamentally encourage them and get out the way. By the same token, that doesn't mean being soft and doing the work for them. I mean, fundamental to success, and yeah, there's a really, I was talking to obviously Jesse sort of pre-recording this, you know, fundamental to success are some very unsexy things like hard work. I'm sorry, there's, you know, everyone wants to be a millionaire in 10 minutes of fame and all that stuff. And you know, most of the listeners would know have been successful. It's fundamentally about hard work, discipline, diligence. And those are not sexy words in 2019 when we want everything immediately. So it's a mixture of those things. But fundamentally, so a few specific in the context of the business I'm talking about. Yeah, we had people doing stupid things. Oh, we do this on a Tuesday or this. And but fundamentally, they were trying to control, the business was unprofitable because it wasn't selling enough, but it was trying to control costs on its way back to profit. But it didn't have a cost problem. And it's always, don't get me wrong, it's always good to reduce cost. But the fundamental problem the business had is it didn't have enough revenue. Mm. There were not enough sales. So we needed to focus not on turning the lights out more or different ways to kind of basically manage the decline in terms of cost. We need to go out there and go and find some new customers, talk to some new people, and start some new business rolling.
So it's really interesting because the people who listen to this podcast typically really motivated and driven practice owners. Oftentimes they'll be successful in terms of what they've been able to create so far. And what a lot of them struggle with, not all, but what is a common struggle is the fact that the practice is key person dependent around them. They're the primary revenue generator. So they're busy on the tools, so to speak, generating revenue. And it's hard to then find the time, the energy, the motivation, not even the motivation, the energy and the time after a long clinical day to then say, okay, team, let's talk about the blockages. Let's talk about what's holding you back. And I guess one of the things that we talk about in the work that we do, which I think resonates with the work that you do, is what gets you to one point is not going to get you to the next level. So how does someone transition from being key person dependent in your space to being able to then lead a team who can clone you, replicate you so that you've got a team delivering on your behalf? What sort of things do you see in that space?
There's about four good questions in there, Jess.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, mate. How long you got? You got 5 hours? Good. Great.
I think what's fundamental with that is understanding that it starts with us. So just summarizing what you just said, you know, what got us to today is probably not going to get us to our tomorrow. So most of your listeners, you know, they probably got where they are through hard work, through diligence, through stacking expertise, obviously in the specifics of dentistry, through getting qualified and so forth. So that's a very kind of, it's hard work, of course, but it's also quite predictable. If you do the right things, you end up as a qualified dentist. If you've got a bit of smart, then you get a practice and you start to make some money. And then the question is, how do you make more money? And then you get to the end of that and say, well, yeah, I don't want to be on the tools effectively for the rest of my life. How do I scale? How do I do different things? And maybe you're interested, you know, maybe you want to fill out your life. One of the things that you said in the introduction, I was interested to talk about you, but the point of this podcast is to help the listeners grow their practice and their lives. And I agree that these things are very much holistically. It's an holistic journey. It's not this isn't just about make more money. I mean, making more money, right? Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But it's how do we create a successful life? And I took this idea, how do we position ourselves to be consistently successful, both professionally and personally?
Mm.
And those are some big things. So coming back, I think fundamentally it starts with self-awareness, because what got us, we have to be aware. If we agree that what got us to here ain't going to get us to there, then that starts with self-awareness that fundamentally we probably need to change. So I work with a lot of people. I'm guessing at the age that we're listening to, I'm 54. Most of the people I work with are probably 40, 45 certainly, 45 to 55. that kind of. I'm thinking there'd be quite a few of your listeners in that kind of.
There'll be some, and quite a bit younger too. Some in their 30s as well.
Okay, oh, some young Turks as well. Good, yeah, good for you.
Yeah, yeah,
they you'd still have hair. Some of your listeners. Make the most of that. That's not forever.
Enjoy that. This is like agony uncles, that show on the ABC. You know, it's like the old guys, you know, giving the young guys advice. Can we hear while you've got it?
But it is. I think fundamentally, it starts with self-awareness, and we probably need to reinvent ourselves and to transform to either a small degree or a large degree.
Mm.
When we do that, and we kind of say, "This is great. There are now all these possibilities of how I can develop as a leader." Not a manager. How can I develop as a leader? And in turn, once I do that, or at the same time as doing that, that then equips me to grow the people around me and to lead a better team, whether they're young or old, or just to bring that new thinking, that new sense of possibility. And I think it's possibly useful to think in terms of chapters. So there's an old chapter that got us to where we are. Wherever we are today, that's a chapter. And if you're listening to this kind of podcast, chances are you're probably looking to work out what's next. I guess most of us are. What's next? What does the next chapter look like? How do I need to change? How do I need to step up to grow in this context as a leader, so that I can then, you know, get really excited personally about the next 5 or 10 years. And once I've got that vision determined, then who do I need? How do I need to? Who do I need? Do I want a large team, a small team? Do I want to make a lot of money, a little bit of money? Whatever your vision is, get very clear on that. And then once you're leading yourself, then you say, okay, once you've got the clarity of your own self-leadership, then you can work out how you're going to lead the others around you. I know we're covering a lot of stuff here.
No, this is good. This is gold.
Maybe skimming. Sorry, I apologize that, because each one of these things we can go into for a long time. But one of the other words I pick up on, Jesse, is energy. And I think you used that a little while ago. It's funny. We can measure dollars. We can measure time. But there's something about, we don't talk about energy. And it can all sound a bit woo-woo. Large ladies in floaty dresses and crystals and things like woo energies and ley lines and crystals and that kind of thing. But energy, yeah, I think, is a very real business force. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And people turn up with a good energy. And energy, you know, I think, really, you know, break energy down. It's about curiosity. It's about possibility. It's about positivity. And we're attracted to that. And I think if you don't have that energy within you, then we need to do work on you to find out what that is. And I think it exists in all of us. Some of us either put it down or suppress it or don't think it's real. I think it's very real. So we need to bring it out. Once we brought it out, yeah, let's put it out into the world and see what happens. Because what I've certainly my experience is, once you're self-aware, once you've got a real leadership kind of heart for your practice, then that energy in turn will infect others. It can come across as many things. Enthusiasm is one of them, which is why we're so attracted to enthusiastic people. And enthusiasm actually means, it comes from the Greek, and actually means to be possessed of a godlike quality, to be in God, on entheo. So there you go. So that's why we're attracted to enthusiastic people.
There we go. I love that. I'm going to borrow that.
Go for it.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. I've got a thought going through my head, but I'm self-filtering, actually. The filter has just come down in time so that I don't have to edit that out in post. A couple of little thoughts there as well, Mark, because you've, again, touched on lots of different things, which I'm really grateful for, because I want to pull on a couple of these threads and see where they take us. You mentioned early in that piece was around self-awareness, and you mentioned the importance of leading oneself. And I really agree with that. I think success is very personal. And being clear about your own vision is personal. And it's also really important to understand that business practice life is not a one-size-fits-all exercise. So one person's definition of a successful life could vary wildly from someone else's. So I wanted to talk a little bit about understanding yourself first, because my view on this, and again, I'm happy to be corrected, is that until we get clear about that, everything else is a little bit semantic. If we're not clear about ourselves and what we're doing, if we're not fitting our own oxygen mask first, it's hard to help others. So could you walk me through a little bit about what you mean by self-leadership, what you mean by clarity? And I guess that's going to lead into things around values and those sorts of things as well.
Yeah, okay. Self-leadership, I think it's almost the opposite. I don't want to get sort of big picture, but yeah, one of the things that drives me crazy about the current world is there's a lack of leadership, lack of personal responsibility. Everything's someone else's fault. There's kind of arguably a handout culture, do something for me. And I think we need to flip. And certainly, I mean, if we go back, I talk about this idea quite a lot, that we live in a VUCA world, which is an acronym, V-U-C-A. Mm-hmm. It's not my term. It's been around for a while, but it stands for volatile, uncertain, complex and ambiguous. And if you run that filter across pretty much anyone on this podcast world, I'm pretty sure, oh, shit, he's right. Yeah, the stuff's more volatile. Gee, I used to be certain, and now the luxury, yeah, I talk about this idea of the luxury of certainty is dead. Gee, everything's more complex. You try ordering a coffee in Melbourne. I mean, it used to be black or white, hot or cold. Now there's about 75 permutations. Yeah. And then the last one is ambiguity. And I think that kind of wrestling with meaning, you know, if you go political systems, you've got the West being attacked in terms of its values. There's a whole lot of stuff going on. I think a lot of people are going, wow, we kind of used to have this kind of world we understood, and we understood how to make our way forward through it, and now not so much. I think in our response to the VUCA world, especially if we work for ourselves, I think a lot of people try and take comfort in large organizations. Well, that's okay. I'll just try and get some kind of cradle to grave job, and I don't have to worry about it too much. Now, if you work for the government, you probably can still get away with that. Mm. But I would argue that's the only industry where that actually pertains, because certainly, and I speak a lot with corporate audiences, the job security, job for life thing, I mean, it's just not true anymore.
Yeah, gone.
And in fact, there was an article in The Australian the other day saying that they're just about swing the axe and probably reduce something like 25 to 30% of jobs in the banking sector. And that will be across the whole board.
Wow.
Which will roll through. And yeah, it's been coming for a while, but I mean, think what that means. I mean, they were formerly very secure jobs. So the antidote to that kind of chaos, if you like, of the VUCA world has to be that we have to take responsibility for our own success and happiness. So that's about self-leadership. And I think in terms of, and sort of, you know, there's lots of ways you can go into self-leadership, but I think a big part of that, apart from the vision and so forth that we spoke about, a lot of that is also about then therefore building our personal resilience. About which is, how do we go forward in this world with a good heart and that sort of energy I spoke around, when there's lots of stuff changing all the time, when there's going to be setbacks and knockbacks. And I think the building our personal resilience is really important. And around that, so one of the things I do is I create my own IP, and I've got a model around that called Building Your Resilience 5-Pack. And fundamentally, that's making sure we rely on lots of things. So again, coming back to a dental practice, don't just rely on your dental practice. Don't just rely on the money it generates to basically validate whether you're successful or good or happy or prosperous. Mm. I mean, it's one metric, and it's a very important metric, of course, but it's only one. I mean, so other values, we need to look at being mixing up our physicality, so doing exercise and so forth. Family is very important. I know family, you know, we can't pick them, and some of them drive us crazy, but family is important. It's really important to do social, you know, to socialize, especially make friends outside of the workplace or outside of your dental practice or the dental world. I'm sexy and vibrant as I'm sure the dentistry world is, Jesse. Yeah. There are possibly even other worlds outside. And it's really important to do stuff that's outside of it. And the other two aspects are emotional, which is just, I think we all have our doubts and fears. So whether that's counseling or just having some good friends to talk to, you can really be authentic and open and vulnerable with, and vulnerability is a big piece. That's important. And then lastly, spirituality, whatever that means. That might mean a religion, or it might mean, you know what, I just need to go for a walk and be out in nature or go swimming in the ocean to touch something and kind of wash away some of the other stuff. So I think building that resilience framework is what we need to help us to have that, to keep that perspective on what we need to do to keep moving forward in this world that's changing all the time. I think the problem is there isn't an easy answer. We're probably looking for an easy black and white answer, and it's not. It's complex.
Yeah.
So what we instead, so self-leadership is actually about equipping ourselves with the toolkit, and resilience is a big one of those. And so that those five factors. So just quickly for me, so one of the things I do, so like you, I do a lot of work on my own as a consultant. I do keynote speaking, a whole lot of other stuff, working with clients, but still spend quite a lot of time working pretty much solo. So one of the things I do, so I'm part of a surf boat crew. People know what surf boats are.
Yep.
But the main, so they're great for physical exercise. They're great because they challenge you, because when it's a big wave on, it's pretty, well, I call it exciting, scary.
Yeah.
And it's good to keep challenging yourself. But predominantly, it's a social thing. You know, three times a week, myself and four other guys get together and talk guy shit. And that's real. So that rowing is just one thing. It's the essence of supporting three of those five pillars for me. And I think it's really important for all of us on the call to make sure we've got that broad, like a safety net, multiple supports into our world to help us thrive and be the best version of ourselves. Because the genesis of that resilience 5-pack model came from the US Army. Because they actually put that in place across the whole US Army, because what they found is too many of their people relying on they're relying on physicality and sort of the core. So, and of course, if you came back from a war theater, we had some kind of physical impairment and or your kind of belief in the values of what you're fighting for, you know, understandably kind of
challenged
or dented through other experiences. These guys had the men and women had little to fall back on, and so they fell over pretty hard. And so the idea was actually to create a more rather than a two or three leg stool, let's make a five leg stool and make sure we're feeding each one of those elements. Sorry, mix my metaphors there. You can't feed the legs of a stool, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean, and that's perfectly fine. So let's talk about this just for a second. I just want to bring this into context as well. So we've spoken a bit about, we're looking at scaling our business. We're looking at transitioning from an owner-operator style business to a more of a true business. And we know that, you know, we're going to get some leverage through systems and team, and we're honing in on team. But the first thing around leading a team, of course, is leading ourselves. And you've already articulated the five keys to that, the five pack around that. I would love to have a five pack. I'm looking at myself as we speak in the video screen here, and there's a distinct absence of any packs of any kind. Yeah. I'd be happy with a one pack at the moment. But from a leadership resilience perspective, five pack is kind of where we're going. So I wanted to ask you, moving up the things of where we go from here, though, is understanding that authenticity is going to be important around that as well, being yourself.
Vulnerability, absolutely.
Vulnerability, authenticity. I'm a huge fan of Brené Brown and her work.
I
think she's a remarkable human being. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about the role you see for courage, the role you see for vulnerability and authenticity in terms of leadership. Because coming back to your surfboat metaphor, I mean, I used to row not in surfboats, in fours and eights. And surf boats, we always used to joke about the surf boat rowers as having a death wish. And so there's a lot of courage involved. So I wanted to ask around courage, vulnerability, and authenticity in leadership. Could you just speak to those points for a second?
Wow, there's some big ones in there, Jesse.
I know, sorry. I keep giving you like multi-pronged questions, sorry.
Yeah. Let's start with, I think, probably the most useful thing, which is vulnerability. Which, as you said, anyone on the pod who's not watched this, you need to, you're must do for the weekend, is to watch Dr. Brené Brown's TED Talk on vulnerability. You'll find it easily. I think it's one of the first or second or third most TED Talk ever. And she basically unpacks the power of vulnerability. And the reason I talk about it in this context is because so many leaders, and I'm talking about big corporate leaders, not just people who run their own practice, we've got a really shit idea of what leadership is. We think leadership is us being the smartest person in the room. All responsibilities come to us and we need to make all the decisions and we just need, you know, we need to be the font of all knowledge. And fundamentally, if it was a shape, it would be our leadership model. It would be a triangle and we'd be sitting at the top in splendid isolation at the top of our triangle, trying to work it all out.
In our ivory tower.
In our ivory tower. And that's never been true, yet a lot of people still think that's what leadership is. Leadership is really, it's about fundamentally about collaboration. So your role as a leader, my role as a leader, is to bring into our world the people, resources, partners, whatever we need and want, not just need, people we want, are going to resonate with and click with, who we're going to go on a journey to build a business. It might be your business, but we should be doing it, not just you or I. So it's fundamentally, we want to build a we, not an I dynamic. And that's about being vulnerability, is about things like, you know what, guys, I'm not quite sure what to do. I don't have all the answers. So let's hear what everyone thinks. And then I'll think about, and I'd love to hear input. It is ultimately your job as a leader to make the final call.
Of course.
And you need to encourage open and honest debate. And it's not a democracy. I'm not saying it's a democracy. There's a lovely quote by Seth Godin, who's a marketeer expert. He says, yeah, liberate yourself from the need to be right.
Yeah.
You don't need to be right. You don't need to know it all. When we as leaders understand that, do you know what? You can just sit back and go, wow, I don't need to be right. I don't need to know. That's cool. So let's sit down in a collaborative group. And you can do that with your practice partners. I think it's important to understand that the wisdom exists in it at every level of your practice.
Yeah.
So it's not just you and maybe your financial partners or investors. You've got young dental assistants anyone. Get everyone in and have a chat. See what they think. I know one of the things we wanted to touch on, I'm not sure if we have time, is to leading younger generations. You know, incorporate them. Ask them what they think. You might be surprised. You'll certainly never know if you just assume. You know, I've got two kids. I haven't got a clue. But I try, 21 and 18 year old, I try and get a sense of what's going on, but I don't know. So I try and ask. So start by making yourself vulnerable. You actually become authentic. And when you see, and the irony of the word vulnerability is that it's vulnerability, it's strength, not a weakness. Whereas I think naturally we'd just say vulnerability is a weakness. Actually, vulnerability is a strength. And as Brené Brown talks about, it is actually the gateway to truth. And then once you are vulnerable and you can be authentic, then you can create the courage to take the next step. And usually it's not the, it's the courage to move into something you've not done before.
Yeah.
So we talked about what ain't gonna got us to now, ain't gonna get us to next. That's because next is not just doing more of the same thing. Yeah. And yeah. that's the courage to step out and do new things. And the word courage actually means to be, it's from the French cœur, which means heart. So it actually means to be full of heart. So courage means to be full of heart. When you unpack it in that way, you can actually say, that's actually an easier way forward. Once you get over your own shit to actually make yourself vulnerable, say, I don't know everything. Why don't I have a bit of a think about this and engage more people in a we collaborative effort rather than I, all-knowing, all-powerful, all-responsible individual. And once you make that shift, everything becomes easier. Not easy. I'm not saying this is easy. No, it's not an easy life. No. I think everyone on the pod's wise enough to know life's not easy, but it's easier and also more pleasurable. And the actual journey, we talk about building a practice and life that's successful. The actual journey is also enjoyable because if the game is not just to get to 55 or 60 or 65 with millions of dollars in the bank, and that's one part of the game, good for you. But it's not the game.
No.
I think there's a much wider, bigger game to play. And that starts with us leading ourselves, becoming vulnerable, being courageous, and not just achieving our own goals. But you'll find if you adopt that kind of mindset I've spoken about, you'll have a lot of other people going on your journey with you.
Mm.
And you'll get so much reflected positivity in unexpected ways. I think that's a lot of good shit will happen to you that's unexpected because you're doing the right things in terms of bringing a good energy, creating possibility for people, and just having a crack.
Absolutely. It's really interesting. There's lots of threads of things I'd like to talk through there. But just before I go down one particular path, just what you were saying reminded me of one of my early mentors. This is going back 20-odd years ago now. And he used to say to me, he's a wise guy, Peter. And Peter used to say to me, Jesse, if you help enough people get what they want from life, you'll have everything you'll ever want and more. And I've always kind of thought about that in the context of leadership as well, because if you've got people on your team, if you can help them get what they want out of their daily work, their existence in your business, and help them have an enriched life, then ultimately they'll stay loyal, you'll retain them, they'll be productive, all those sorts of things. What I did want to talk about though was just dialing into courage for a second, because again, what got us here won't get us there is going to require taking your foot off first base and having the courage to run to second base, potentially, to use that baseball metaphor. But somewhere in the middle, you're in no man's land. There is a point when you're neither on first base nor on second, and there is a holy crap moment. I'm doing trapeze here without a safety net. And again, I'm mixing my metaphors now. But the point being, it's very easy to go back to what you know, and it takes courage to push through. So I wanted to ask you specifically around courage and committing to that change. How do you suggest, or what have you observed in the people that you've worked with? How do they push through to those second bases, knowing that for a moment in time, they're going to be in no man's land?
Yeah, a good question. I think we need to be courageous, but also, this will sound contrary, we need to be courageous, but with a risk management. We're not saying, hey guys, just rip it all up today. On Monday, you're coming, it's all going to be completely different. That would be, hey, it might work, but you might also crash the business you've spent 20 years building up.
So absolutely.
I think we do need to do, and a good way to do it is encourage like an experimentation type of mindset. So are there parts of your existing practice, your existing business that you can, well, let's put in place, let's experiment with something. Let's do the way we onboard patients. Let's do it differently. Let's do it. Maybe you currently do it very sort of electronically and efficiently. Most actually that used to think like that was an improvement. Actually, what we want to do now is we want to literally touch the patients much more. We want to phone them personally because we're finding that the human touch is outweighing the kind of the efficiencies of automation. I don't know, whichever way you're on, for example, you might want to switch. But the point is pilot something that isn't going to kill your business one way or the other, but is going to give you a sense of experimentation. Mm. We are in trouble of mashing some more metaphors here. So rather than find yourself midway between where you are and where you want to get to, so second base, build some little structures that will go in the direction of second base, but understand that some of them are going to fail.
Yeah.
And I think it's getting comfortable. So it's having a proportionate risk kind of management process. So there's three projects. Let's start with three of them, little projects along the lines I've described. Let's understand they might fail, and that's okay. If they fail, that's okay, because either, well, two things. They'll either succeed or they'll fail, and they'll either, it'll be good because if they succeed, but if they'll fail, we'll have learned from that process.
Yeah.
This, again, it's a bit of a cliche in our world, but it's so true. We need to get more comfortable with failure. It goes back into that piece about, you know, the all-knowing, omniscient, and perfect leader. And so the way I would frame that with my, I get my practice guys, hey, guys, say there's 10 people. I don't know, I'm making up a number. There's 10, but here's what I want to try, guys. We're going to mix it up. We're going to try doing this differently. Yeah. What do you think? And they go, yeah, get everyone's ideas. Right, let's try that. Okay, guys, this might not work. And that's fine. I want to trial it for 90 days and see what happens. Yeah. But let's go on a bit of a journey. And because our vision for our practice, we want to be the best dental practice in ABC town, whatever. And this is one of the things I want to do. I want to play with that and see what happens.
Yeah.
And if you have that kind of playful, experimental attitude, yes, it still requires some courage, but it's sort of proportionate courage that you can say, okay, and that went well, and that didn't go well, we learned from that. And over time, that kind of mindset of continually putting out new little pilot projects into the new, into the unknown, I think that's what will build up for you a practical way forward to basically, I guess, prove to yourself, give you comfort in doing new things.
Yeah.
So it's knowing that no one thing I might try might work, but what I do know is based on the way we go about, if we launch 5 or 6 different projects into the next time period, we're pretty sure 2 or 3 will come off. And we're not quite sure which ones will work, which ones won't, but that's all good. And that's how we move forward. And that's courageous in itself, because the alternative to that, to your point, is, hey, we don't know anything. It's not proven. Let's just do what we know. Let's just stick to our knitting. Yeah. And then we're kind of stuck.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And then you've built yourself a job, which might be great, but if you're looking to create time in the equation, then that's going to be a challenge. So, yeah, being able to create leverage through teams is going to be important, and that's going to require courage at some point.
And also expect and allow your team to fail.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, one of the big problems people say, oh, we're fine with failure until someone fails. Who did that? Who's responsible for that? Get them in my office. And you've got to, I'm not comfortable with repeated failure by an individual, but give people permission to experiment, to grow, to have a crack, learn, adjust, repeat. That's the process. And funny, pulling a lot of this together, Jess, isn't it true? It's pretty messy, right? Life is messy. Business is messy. If you want to put it all in a box and wrap it up and think it's kind of, it's all clear and essentially binary, if that's your world, well done. It's certainly not my world.
Yeah, no, me neither. In actual fact, I remember years ago I wrote a blog post about binaryism. It was the bane of my existence. You know, it's black or white, zeros or ones. We seem to live in a world that loves black and white, binary, linear processes. And what I really, really encourage everyone to understand, well, lots of things that you've spoken about today, Mark, but just that last point about business is messy. It is not clean. It is not linear. There is nothing neat and tidy about it. And the more we try to bring it into a linear process, the harder it is. And God knows I've given it a red hot go. But business is messy, and I really love that. And people are messy. We're messy. Our team are messy. Yeah. And and I think that's the human condition, and I really love that. Mark, there's lots of really good examples of leadership, and I know you've got a diagnostic tool which allows people to rate their ability on their leadership. There's like a diagnostic scale that you've got. There's, I think, 5 or 6 levels on that diagnostic, isn't there?
Yes. So one of the things I'd encourage people to do, because one of the other things we need to do in our, you know, this world where we need to develop our self leadership, and basically you guys lead yourselves and your practices and businesses forward. One of the key things you need to do is build your influence.
Mm.
And that's a big part of creating a resource that's going to go with you as you grow. So that's essentially, how do you capture what you know, your expertise, and bring it to life in a way that's going to serve your patients, the marketplace, and also your staff. And that's really capturing every aspect of you, from your expertise through to your experience, but also really importantly, also your essence. And you've got to get that third piece, which your essence, your personality, your energy. That's another word that we've discussed today. Mm. Bring your energy into conjunction with the expertise and experience is really important. So what I literally encourage you to do is visit my website, and we'll put the link on the pod notes. And there's a diagnostic. You can work out where you are in the influence style, from asleep, which means basically you have no influence. You're not present on any social media. You think it's all a waste of time. Through to the next level is agitated. And agitated is, and I think probably most users on the pod are at least agitated, because you're kind of inquiring, you're curious at what's it? How do I need to grow myself, others, my business? How do I grow my influence? Agitated. Next, we become active. That's where you're probably playing in the space, creating some content, getting some of your thinking out into the world. Next is amplified, which is where you're doing that very effortlessly. So, for example, Jesse would certainly be amplified in the space. And you can see he's a really good example of someone who's building not just a dentistry practice, but also another part as an entrepreneur and a business advisor around this. That's really cool. And then the last one is awesome. Somewhere between asleep and awesome. And if you complete the diagnostic, you work out where you are, you'll get a score, but also you'll get a personalized report. Some of the things you can do and be and build to actually start to take you further down the journey along the lines that we've discussed. And as I say, it starts with self-leadership, but once you've got the self-leadership, once you start to understand that, then there's some of the things you need to do, and certainly building influence is a key one.
Yeah, being influential is a really important element of leadership, I think, because you know, you want to be able to influence your people positively. You want to be able to influence your patients positively. You want to be able to influence the community positively of which you're part. And I think being influential is a really important part of making a contribution, not just to your business, but to the lives of anyone with whom you interact. And I think that's really key. I wanted to ask you, we have gone uphill and down dale today, my friend, and I'm very grateful for your time. I do have a couple of quick questions I'd love to ask you about, though, because I'm conscious that you know, you've got a full diary. I wanted to ask you, though, when it comes to your work in the leadership space, and again, looking back across your career, we didn't really touch in the podcast. We did touch about it off air a little bit, military background through corporate and beyond. What surprises you most about leadership in today's world?
You've given me permission to jump on my high horse. The answer is almost complete absence of leadership in our public life, in our organisations, in our public bodies, certainly in our politicians. That is across the board, both in Australia. As I said, I'm English, so I look at what's happening, for example, in the UK with Brexit and can almost weep. Mm. There's just an appalling lack of leadership. Because we're not seeing authenticity. We're certainly not seeing vulnerability. We're seeing people who espouse one thing, which is they represent the company or they represent their constituents, and they clearly don't. They represent themselves. Mm. And it's self-interest. Leadership is never about self-interest. Mm. Even self-leadership, and that might sound contradictory, shouldn't really be about self-interest. Self-leadership is about growth and being the best possible human being you can be. And guess what? When you do that well, chances are you'll make a few quid. Good on you. And that's amazing. And I'm not denigrating that at all. It's really important. But I think as I look around the communities that I've been lucky enough to build since leaving corporate and made a friend in Jesse today, which is wonderful. There's a lot of really cool people out there, and I include everyone listening. We all have the capacity to be great leaders and lead along the lines that we've described. Because as I say, the world. I actually wrote a blog. The world needs you. Are you ready? Because I reckon it's not quite a revolutionary talk. We do need leaders in our communities and our businesses who are going to do the right thing along the lines we've spoken about. And you're just not seeing it. There's a thing called the Trust Index, and it's in which basically charts the levels of trust in institutions, in leaders, in organizations, in politicians. And the indices are in free fall. They're not coming off a little bit. They come from like 75% down to 45% in a couple of years. They're just extraordinary. You're talking driving off the edge of a cliff, drops in the trust. I mean, look at in Australia, the Banking Royal Commission, you're just going to have the same things, just about going to go through aged care. You've just got people doing the wrong thing. I saw a report by, I think it was EY, and they're kind of the findings from the Banking Royal Commission. Hey, so what we've learned is that leaders need to act with integrity, be authentic, and come from a place of trust. And you're thinking, how's that a new thing? That should never be a new thing. That's just the price of turning up as a leader, right? Or it was when I grew up.
That's the entry
and
price.
So so leadership is in crisis at a meta level. But I'm very hopeful that, because I know a ton of people, and I reckon there's a ton of people listening to this, who can lead in their own way. And I think together we can be those forces for community and positivity and collaboration and getting some good stuff done. Because fundamentally, I think people are good and they want to do the right thing and they want to help themselves, but also help others. I believe in that. But the gap is we're just not seeing that. When we look at leaders at the higher level, we're just not seeing that, in my opinion.
Okay. Let me wrap up our conversation today by asking you a hypothetical scenario. The English and the Australians do love a good barbecue, and we have many things in common, and our love of barbecues is amongst them. So if you were going to invite some of the most inspiring leaders around for a barbecue, a bit of a chit-chat, a couple of beers, a few snags, all that sort of stuff. And for our international listeners, snags is the vernacular for sausages. So If you were going to have a barbecue with your favorite leaders, people you admire, people who you respect, who would you invite to your barbecue? Let's just say the top three or four, have many, but in that kind of vicinity.
That's a tough question. So leaders I admire, wow. I would have Seth Godin,
yep,
who I've mentioned. He's a wonderful thinker. I would have Brené Brown. I think she'd be an extraordinary guest because she's got a very deep understanding of the messiness of life and I think all the things we need to change. I talk about the footnote to what I do is I talk about I help people to think, do, and be more. Mm. And I think Brené would be excellent in that sense. And the last one I think is probably a controversial one. Guy called Dr. Jordan Peterson.
Oh, yeah.
He starts fights, which I quite like. He's been painted as an alt-right thinker. I'm not sure that's quite right. I think he's got some pretty common down-to-earth sort of views about hard work, doing the right thing, accepting that life's tough. So and he's certainly got a great mind. So I'd love to have him, but I'm not sure we'd get much. I'm not sure we'd get much conversation in because he's a bit like me. He talks a lot.
I think that'd be some extraordinary guests to have at a barbecue, and I can imagine the conversation between Seth Godin, Brené Brown, and Jordan Peterson would be very engaging, very forthright, and it'd be stimulating. And so that'd be fantastic. You have provided plenty of gold for our listeners today, and I really want to say thank you so much for your wisdom, your generosity, your vulnerability in sharing all that you do and all that you've learned. Ladies and gents, if you want to find out more about what Mark does, I really would commend you to head across to his website, markhodgson.com.au. He's mentioned the influencer diagnostic, and I'm encouraged to do that, to see where you stand on that scale from asleep to awesome. I'd also encourage you to check out his book, Time to Shine, which is a collection of writings and blog posts. And the thing I love about that is it's full of vignettes, which means that you can dip in, get what you need, and come back to it later. And I really like that style of book because it means you can snack on it. And I love that sort of writing. It's wonderful. Mark, once again, thank you so much for coming on our program today. It's been tremendously enjoyable, and I hope we can do it again.
I think we need to, Jesse, because we've only just scratched the surface. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
It's a pleasure, mate.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.